Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the 1st of October. Welcome to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests discussing the issues of the day. Obviously, on today's show, we're going to be looking at the developing situation in Lebanon and other locations as the Israeli armies are launching a major offensive in there. Plus, we may, if we have time, look at the situation with the Conservative Party conference and anything else that is crossing either your radar and some Spanish news as well, or there's something that you want to get your viewpoint across to. If you want to get involved with this morning's show, then these are the numbers in which to contact us.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on plus 34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
But first, let's have a look at the morning papers to see exactly what they are saying. Bit of a mixed bag, and of course, the Daily Mail starts with "The world holds its breath as Israel starts its invasion of Lebanon." The Middle East is on the brink, it argues, with US officials locked in talks with Israel about what happens next. It reports that President Joe Biden is trying to salvage his ceasefire proposal for Israel and Hezbollah. Financial Times says the US is sending an additional few thousand troops and fighter jets to the region to protect the 40,000 US service personnel already there and to help Israel defend itself. Daily Telegraph homes in on the Israeli Prime Minister's warning to Iran that it is heading towards the abyss. The paper reports that Benjamin Netanyahu gave a speech in English directed at citizens in Iran, in which he says the Islamic people's puppets were being, the Islamic Republic's puppets, excuse me, were being eliminated by the day. There is nowhere in the Middle East that Israel cannot reach. The Telegraph quotes him as saying, the paper says his words were a possible prelude to war with Iran itself. The Times says it's been told that migrants will continue to be housed in hotels for up to 3 years because of the asylum backlog will take, and it will take much longer to clear than Labour thought. Ending the use of hotels was one of Keir Starmer's election pledges, though the party gave no time frame. According to the paper, the Home Office officials had been expecting to stop using the last hotel within a year, but Home Secretary Yvette Cooper is said to have concluded privately it would take longer to clear that backlog. The Telegraph notes that her predecessor, James Cleverly, told a fringe event at the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham that it was a mistake to use the phrase "stop the boats" about tackling migrant crossings. The Tory leadership contender said its use distilled a complicated problem into a soundbite. According to The Guardian, the Prime Minister has been urged to do more to help with rising gas and electricity costs this winter, as average energy bills go up today by almost £150 a year. The Resolution Foundation think tank said its research suggested around 7.7 million households would struggle to heat their homes in the wake of the winter fuel payment cuts for most pensioners in England and Wales. Many of the papers cover BBC's verdicts on the Strictly Come Dancing bullying claims. The corporation cleared Giovanni Panisce of using physical aggression towards his partner Amanda Abingdon, but he was found to have used belittling language. The Express highlights the vindication for Abingdon, noting the BBC has apologised to her over bullying complaints against Pranith. The Daily Mirror says both sides have claimed victory, while the Sun's front page features a single speech bubble over the former dance partners, with both saying, "I've won." And The Guardian and The Times both report that Mount Everest is having a growth spurt and becoming taller. Scientists said it's partly down to isostatic rebound, which is a great name for a band, by the way, where extreme erosion of surrounding areas allows the mountain to be pushed upwards by as much as half a millimeter a year. Who had sprouting mountains on their bingo cards for this year? So those front pages from the top, they were starting today with all the Strictly stuff. The Metro, Vindicated. The Sun, I've Won. Daily Express, BBC apology to Amanda and Strictly bullying row. Now, meanwhile, the important news, the Mail, world holds breath as Israel set to invade Lebanon. The Guardian, Israel has begun ground attacks on Hezbollah inside Lebanon, says US. The Daily Telegraph, Netanyahu warns Israel, you are in our sights. The Times, warning to Iran as Israel forces gear up to invade Lebanon. Factual Times, Israel's forces poised for imminent ground assault in Lebanon, says US. The I leads with the post office scandal. Post office, second IT scandal linked to Ronkhorst convictions. And finally, the Daily Star. The Daily Star says the Matrix is real. It brings to bear its fifth favorite boffin in the whole world on the nature of the universe, which turns out to be actually an advanced AI simulation with all of us humans just characters playing a part. Troubling news from Daily Star's fifth favorite boffin in the whole world. The Matrix is real and the Bible proves it. A physicist insists the universe is actually an advanced AI simulation and we're just characters playing a part, which is nice. And those, for better or worse, are our headlines on this Tuesday, the 1st of October, if you want to get involved.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And I'm joined in the studio this morning by Richard Carroll and Andres Gallardo. Gentlemen, good morning to you.
Hey, Giles, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning to both of you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
I'm glad that I've been able to join the program with the main news of Strictly Come Dancing.
Yes, I thought that was...
Yes, I've come well prepared on the whole row of Strictly today.
Belittling language has been used. I mean, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Exactly.
Well, I was getting all excited about Schofield.
Were you now?
Absolutely. I thought we were going to debate the merits of his new program and all that.
Do you know how much interest I have in both those subjects?
Well, about as much as we do.
Exactly, right. Let's move on, because obviously we've had developments over the past 48 hours with the ground invasion now of Lebanon by the Israeli forces. Also, the attacks on Hutu rebels, of course, in Yemen, and the speech in English yesterday during the last 48 hours by Netanyahu with the words to Iranians basically saying overthrow your regime, your puppets, and nowhere is safe in the Middle East is safe from our reach. Is this panel and 952 78 4000, is this Netanyahu fighting an impossible fight? Is he trying to decapitate, to take out first Hamas, then Hezbollah, now threatening Iran? Is he just fighting wars to keep himself in power? Is this the last act of perhaps a desperate president or a desperate prime minister in Israel? I laughingly joked outside that we were going to do a sort of spin the dial and see who he's going to attack next. You know, it's a sort of random thing, and you know, will Andorra and Liechtenstein be next on the thing? But you know, where are we, Richard? I'll come over to you first.
Well, thank you for that.
It's all right.
Start with the easy questions first.
Well, we can go to Strictly if you want, Schofield, but
First of all, I mean, I have to say that I'm always horrified by any deaths that are occurring, be it in Gaza, be it the Hamas incursion into Israel on October the 7th. Any of these things is horrible, horrendous. And anyone who's been involved in anything like this personally, you'd be horrorized by it. You just not want to go and have anything like that. I can tell you, it is a horrible situation to be confronted with. So I think that we're now in a no-win situation. It's going to be a Pyrrhic victory. If Israel get whatever they would like to get, whatever that might be, if it's at the enlarged Israel, if it's just to make sure Hezbollah go behind the Litani River, is it to annihilate Hamas and Hezbollah? Whatever the aims of the current strategy of the Israeli cabinet is, at the end of the day, things are going to go back to resume where it was before. It'd be a Pyrrhic victory, unfortunately. There will always be an opposition, like we've seen in, for example, in Ireland, like we've seen in Spain with the ETA. At the end of the day, you have to sit across a desk with the people you probably do not like very much, and you have totally different opinions, and you have to sit down and negotiate. You will not get a victory through militarism. You can bomb the bejesus out of the people, but like Hamas, I mean, you killed 40,000 people over there, rightly, wrongly. Some people say, well, a ratio of 4-1, one combatant to four innocent people is fair and just. How they rationalize that, I honestly don't know, but they do. But you're not going to kill the idea that something is not quite right with the current way that Israel is trying to expand its borders or protect its borders. Coupled to that, there's also the issue that United States, even though Biden stumblingly says, oh, you know, I want ceasefire, etc., the American regime just carries on supplying continuously and will carry on supplying Israel with all the armaments they need. And that's no way to stop a conflict. So I believe that it'd be a Pyrrhic victory. I mean, he's the Netanyahu and his cabinet, quite an extremist cabinet, going into Lebanon. It's a failed state. They don't really have an army to speak of. They don't really have a government to speak of. It's bankrupt. And so it's quite an easy target. It's quite a soft target. With the weaponry that they have, I mean, for example, the weaponry, Nasrallah got killed with a lot of the leading guys of Hezbollah.
Yeah.
They used 82 one-ton bunker busters.
Yeah.
With American planes, American bombs. I mean, I don't want to use the word overkill because that doesn't sound quite right. But, you know, that's the sort of power they have. So it's technology against ideology. And that ideology will not disappear. It will come back in 10 years' time or whenever.
Technology against ideology. Because there's an interview I recorded yesterday, which will be going out on the 7th, and I was saying that to this particular person, you cannot defeat an ideology through military means, in terms of, as we've seen with ETA, as we've seen with the IRA, you are not fighting an opponent who has an army, battalions, whatever, in a normal war. And all that you do in these situations, I was arguing with him, and he was arguing back quite forcefully with me, is you're doing a recruiting campaign for Hamas and for Hezbollah, because you cannot decapitate these things, because this monster is a hydra with many heads. So as soon as you drop a bomb and you get rid of Hezbollah's high command, others will spring up in their place, because it's not a military in the terms of the fact that they are organized like that. Hezbollah is in Lebanon. Hezbollah is a state within a state within Lebanon. It seems to be some sort of, you know, independent republic, or whatever you want to call it, and it doesn't abide by the normal rules of statehood or how we define a military. Andres, I'm coming to you. What are your thoughts? Has Israel gone rogue, and is this overkill?
No.
Right.
Let's look at the facts first. Yep. Okay. October the 7th happened.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. Okay.
But history didn't start on October the 7th.
If we start going back in history, we'll end up 3,000 years ago. Every time someone tries to say
that Hamas was wrong, October the 7th we started.
October the 7th happened. That is a fact.
Why? Why did it happen?
Why did it happen?
Yes.
Because Hamas, under the instructions of a brutal dictatorship of Tehran,
Have you been to Iran?
I haven't been to Iran.
Do you know anything about Iran?
Hold on, you can't go
a brutal dictatorship of Iran if you've never been the place.
It's a brutal dictatorship, and that is a fact. I know you had some guests a few months ago saying there was Iran was like a soft dictatorship. It's not. It's a brutal state. It's a brutal state. They've been there since 1979.
Of the country, since never been there. You never visited. You don't talk to the people.
We know their actions. We know they're financing Hamas. Yeah. They know they're financing Hezbollah. They know they didn't want the Pact of Abraham
to go ahead because they are financing Hamas.
They are in a cold war with Saudi. Who is financing Hamas?
I mean, get your facts right.
Let me just put my point across, and then you can have all the callers and you and the whole world against me, but I'm going to state.
Go for it, Andre. Okay, Andre, you have the floor,
The fact is that Hamas attacked Israel in their own territory. The fact is that Hamas have been financed and helped by Iran. The fact is that they have been rocketing for years and years. They've been rocketing Israel constantly, and they've been defending from this rocketing. The same has happened in the southern area of Lebanon, and that I've seen with my own eyes. They control the whole section of southern Lebanon, and they're pointing their rockets at Israel. And if you go and visit the kibbutz that they are just next to the border, the people there will tell you that two or three nights a week they have to sleep in shelters, and they've been doing it for years with children and everything else, because now everyone likes to mention that there are children around. Of course there are bloody children around. So that is the fact. The fact is that Iran, which is in a cold war with Saudi, have been wanting to be the main player in the Middle East, and they were failing, so they had to do something about it, and they have been encouraging their subsidiaries, which is Hamas and Hezbollah, to attack Israel to destabilize the region, hoping that the other Arab countries will jump on board with them, but they haven't. And that is the main point. The reaction from the other Arab countries have been lukewarm, to say the most. And the reality here is that Israel is fighting the war of the West. And they are. And they're doing it, and they say, well, the United States haven't got any influence anymore in the world stage and everything. That's not true. The United States are back in Israel because they know that they want the Abraham Pact to go ahead, to develop the Middle East into a more sensible society. They collaborate with the West, and Tehran has created an axis with China and Russia to destabilize the area. And let's not forget, in the United Nations, the permanent members of the Security Council are who? Russia and China. So we are in a situation where we have to recognize the fact, and it's an objective fact, that the Hezbollah and Hamas are a subsidiary of Iran, that they want to destabilize the Middle East in their favor, in their cold war with Saudi. And that is the reality of the region. And
well, that's your reality of the region.
That's an objective fact. You know, the cards are on the table now, and they can be seen clearly by everyone.
Because you have the...
Richard.
I think what Andreas has said a lot of things that are quite relevant, quite true. For example, the reaction of the Arab nations to all of this. And a lot of the Arab nations, especially in the Arabian Peninsula, they're Sunni. Palestinians are Sunni. Mm. Now, there's a couple of things that I would like to mention. One is the actual Palestinians themselves. In Andreas' discussion, not once did he mention Palestinians, who are the people who are being subjugated. You know, they have a prison camp, shall we say, in Gaza, that is totally surrounded by Israel. And any goods coming in, coming out, all has to go through Israeli hands before it's let in. This was before October the 7th, right? And these people are all displaced from previous encounters with the Israeli IDF and the political force. So then you go on the West Bank. where you have these, and you can't call them settlers because they are squatters. They are extremist, religious, and armed squatters that are illegal. And unfortunately, Israel, at the behest and with the okay from the United States, ignores anything that comes from the ICC, ICJ, because they say, we're not part of it. They ignore anything that comes from the United Nations because they say, well, we can do whatever we like because we have the United States behind us. Now, we can go and discuss this backwards and forwards about who is right, who's wrong.
Right.
Some people say that, on the Israeli side, you say that Hamas and Hezbollah are an existential threat to Israel. Well, they're not, because there's about 30,000 troops in Hezbollah. There's about 20,000, there was about 20,000 in Hamas. They're poorly armed in comparison to Israel. Israel has all the means possible to defeat anything. So it's not, they are not an existential threat to Israel. So that's one thing that has to be fully understood. It's a good excuse. It's a great excuse.
If you've got a nation saying, our aim, as several of us, is to wipe Israel off the map, that's an existential threat, Richard. No?
Hamas, no. If you go to the charter that Hamas had, they revised it, I think it was back in 2017, and they said, okay, fine, well, we can live side by side. In the initial ones, go and have a look at it. Go and have a look at the revised charter of Hamas, and you'll find that.
Right. Okay. Looking. Let me just. Okay. You said something there that it's something quite common that everyone is saying, that the Palestinian people are subjugated, and so on. Let me just remind you of something. 20% of the population of Israel, there's Israelis, they are Palestinian Arabs, and they live in the Israeli society. The members of parliament, the judges, the police.
One member of parliament, isn't it? Who's
no, there has been historically more than one, but the judges, the 19% of the population in the universities of Israel are Palestinian Arabs. So don't tell me that they are being subjugated. The ones that are being threatened by Israel are terrorists.
The people in the West Bank and Gaza are totally subjugated. And continues to so with the aid of the IDF and the police.
Hamas. Let's start there. They're subjugated by Hamas.
No.
All right. They're not. No, of course.
Wait one second. Hold on a second. Gaza is surrounded by Israel. Everything that comes in, all the goods, etc., all the aid, whatever it is, all goes through Israeli hands before coming into Gaza. Now, you're right. Gaza had an opportunity to do something great with all the money that's come in. But it's a Palestinian problem. Why is Israel getting involved with that Palestinian problem? Leave the Palestinians. Sooner or later, they will get it right. It's like any country. Let's say Nigeria or Afghanistan. All right, it's not the ideal sort of type of country, but it's their problem. Why do you want to influence it from outside? Let Gaza just do what they want and be like that. As long as they don't increase, so we say, the Hamas type of aggression and things like that. If they want to squander their money, let them squander it. It's their money, it's their problem. It's not yours. So let them be. Now, what is your problem? What we are seeing, like in the West Bank, is...
That's a different problem.
It's Palestinian people.
It's a different problem.
It's a Palestinian state, and you guys are flaunting all the rules... Are you guys? I'm sorry. I'm not saying you guys. Israel is flaunting...
Palestinian state. What Palestinian state?
The West Bank.
The West Bank is not a Palestinian state.
Well, you're actually quite right, because according to Netanyahu, Gaza is not Palestinian, West Bank's not Palestinian, Golan Heights not Palestinian, and the south part of Lebanon is also not Palestinian.
There's no state of Palestine, right? And the problem in the West Bank is a completely different problem. And I agree with you that the settlers in the West Bank are not in all the cases, but in some cases they're illegal settlements and they shouldn't be there. And I totally agree with you because I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the settlements in Hebron, for instance, and it's a broken city because of the settlers. But that is a different problem. The problem they've got there is that the Palestinian Authority that runs the West Bank is a profoundly corrupt organization.
Well, we know Abbas doesn't control anything outside his own office. I agree. But it's nicely weak because that suits certain sort of people. But the thing also that I have a little bit of objection to is the members of cabinet in Israel. People like Ben Gavir.
Right.
He's the Minister for Internal Security or something like that. Yeah, he wants to get rid of all Palestinians. And well, if Palestinians want to stay, they will have absolutely no rights. And he's not the only one who voiced this type of rhetoric. And that is really dangerous, extremist, fascist. I mean, you've got to be very careful on what you say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's extremist sort of... how can you start talking to people on a logical basis to try and find some sort of solution, which you have to do if you have these people there? All right, in ETA, in the IRA, you also had extremists. And finally, you know, some sort of coordination, some sort of agreement came along.
Do you know what the difference is with other extremists? Is that these people have been voted in by the population because there is a democracy in Israel. So we, and in any democracy, we have to accept the results of it.
Right.
Like in Austria, they have now to accept the fact that
Hamas
have won the election.
But that's not true.
Hamas was
democratically elected, and the next day, under the behest of the United States, they were made to be a terrorist enterprise.
They were elected 20 years ago, and they haven't gone anywhere. I mean, what kind of democracy is that?
It's their
and
problem.
Terrorists, they go and hide amongst the civilian population. All of these things, they have to be put into the equation, because we're only hearing one side, especially in the West, we're only hearing one side of the story. The reality is that there are terrorists and the cowards hiding...
Nonsense. In the West, all you hear is the pro-Israeli media.
Right. What was he saying?
All Western media is very much pro-Israeli. Now...
No, they're not.
Now, after 40,000 whatever people were killed, you start seeing your reaction. But in general, the media is controlled very much and it's pro-Israeli.
No, it's not.
Going to go right straight off the blocks, as I thought it might be. Going to go to a quick break, then we're going to come in from some comments on the social media.
TRE.
Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Morning, caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, Felix Tur.
Morning, Felix.
Good morning. This fella that you've got on there this morning, what's his name?
You mean Richard or Andres?
Yeah, Richard. This guy is a complete apologist for Iran. I heard him on here before. And I need to ask him how he squares up the whole situation about the Iranian revolution, the Iranian Islamic revolution.
Well, quite happily. I mean, you had on the one side an extreme, brutal dictator called the Shah of Iran, who was probably as bad as Khomeini. You know, I'm not saying that the Islamic Republic is the best place in the world and it's the kindest place. But if you start talking about theocracies, why don't you look at the United States, for example? Evangelical Christians rule the roost in the United States. That's almost a theocracy. It's almost as bad as...
Immediately you create a diversion to the United States. The Shah was actually a progressive figure.
Yes.
If you look at the way that women are dressed under the Shah, mm-hmm. they're dressed in a very modern way, mm-hmm. complete freedom of dress.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the way that they're dressed now,
mm-hmm.
they're totally enclosed.
Nope. No, they're not. Sorry, Felix. Yeah, they're not.
I've just come back from
Iran, so I don't know where you're getting your information from.
You're telling lies. I've seen the pictures. Everybody has seen the pictures. They've seen the videos.
If you go to Tehran, you see the women without the veil.
You keep interrupting me.
Well, I do, because what you're saying is not correct.
The women are dressed. We've seen the pictures, we've seen the videos, we've seen the protests, we've seen the women being carted off for dressing in Western, for keeping their hair uncovered. We've seen that. We've seen the wagons, we've seen the Islamic lodges picking up the women, sticking them into wagons. We've seen the self-sacrifice of these wonderful women. So you're in the wrong.
Felix.
Go to Iran.
I do. I've been going to Iran since 1999. I go there regularly. I happen to know a little bit about what I'm talking about when it comes to Iran.
Then you're not expressing any kind of point of view in support of these women. Okay.
Press.
So that's
you're wrong.
That's a start.
You're wrong.
Number two. Number two.
Yeah, go on.
Iran has threatened Israel that it would be wiped off the map. Rafsanjani made this threat many, many, many years ago. He said that it would be very difficult to attack Iran because it's so big. But he said that Israel is different. Israel has
His name was Ahmadinejad. Well, just trying to get your facts right. Ahmadinejad said he wasn't wiping Israel off the face of the earth.
There was a leader.
Get your facts right.
I think his name was Rafsanjani. And he said the following. He said that Iran is a very big place, impossible to defeat it. It will survive a nuclear attack. That's wrong, by the way. But anyway, he said that all the Jews in Israel are cooped inside a space of about 10 miles square in a very tiny part. And he said that one nuclear bomb would wipe the Jewish people off the face of the earth. This is the role of Haji Amin al-Husseini, who joined with the Nazis in the Holocaust. He was the leader of the Palestinians, and the further thing that you get completely wrong is that the Balfour Declaration set aside Palestine to be the homeland of the Jewish people. A very noble thing to do after all the oppression that they have suffered.
That was 1917. There was a huge anti-Semitic feeling with all...
You've got 2 hours to speak, my friend. Full 2 hours. Well, keep your mouth shut while I speak.
Whoa, Felix.
I beg your pardon.
Excuse me, don't tell people to keep your mouth shut.
If you get your facts wrong, I have to reply.
He's got 2 hours to speak.
Well, he's not.
I'm on here for a few minutes.
All right, Felix, I'll keep quiet. You carry on.
Right. At the beginning of this, Balfour brought out a motion to call for Palestine to be the homeland of the Jewish people. And then that was put into international law by the Paris Conference in 1919, from 1970 to 1919. Then Britain was appointed to be the guarantor of this homeland for the Jews. The first thing that Britain did, Britain, the first thing they did was to cut off from Palestine, which was to be the homeland of the Jews, 4/5. And called it Transjordan. And that became the present-day Jordan. And that is a Palestinian state. Then the Jews were left with just that little bit left, 1/5 of Palestine, 1/5. And the Arabs then said, thank you very much for Jordan, for the 4/5, but we want another state. We want to disrupt the plans of the Zionists to create a state. And that has been the whole purpose of Islam since that time. To stop the Jews having a state of their own. All this talk about Gaza, all this stuff that you're going over about Gaza, that is Israel, my friend. That is Israel. The Palestinian state exists in Jordan, 4/5 of the original. Okay? So get your facts right.
Thank you. Felix, thank you very much for your call, and always good to hear from you.
I would call it the battle of the facts.
The battle of the... Right, so let me go for the first time to our social medias this morning. If you want to get involved with the social medias, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
I was going to go to the social medias, but the phones are going absolutely bananas, as I thought they might do. Morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Charles. It's Alf.
Morning, Alf.
This must be the fourth or fifth time you've had the subject about the Middle East.
Well, yeah, and it is ongoing.
In the style that's happening today, I mean, I've you know, a lot of time for Richard. He's got a lot of experience in the Middle East. You know, he understands from his point of view what's happening. For Andreas has always said what he's always saying today. I don't have any difference with either of them. They're both right. At one stage, I think I told you, I was a member of Labour supporting the Palestinians and Labour supporting supporting Israel. And it's not a dichotomy. It's the same thing. It's called how do we arrive at peace. But what we end up with, almost, it's not your fault, Charles, and I'm not blaming you, and I'm not saying that the program's wrong. I'm just saying that sometimes it gets a little bit wearing because effectively, and just had Felix on again, no doubt at some stage Hill will phone in and a few others will phone in, you know, the historians. You know, they love talking about the history or not talking about the history, and you've got to go back to, you know, the Saracen armies, whatever it is. It's fine, you know, but we don't want to keep being going over. And remember, every historian has their own version of history.
Yeah.
So you end up having a row about history and who's right and wrong. The second thing is, you end up with, like you've got today, and I'm, again, you know, Andreas is a friend. I'm not knocking, but he's there effectively defending what Israel are doing, and Richard's saying, you know, the Iranians ain't as bad as what everybody's making out, and a lot of this is, and I think most of us who've understood the Western press for many years, nobody's a bigger critic of the media than I am, and he's right, you know, you get distorted facts and you don't know. But what you end up with, again, is another row. It's a row between who are right and who are wrong. And there is no winner from that, because nobody's right and everybody's wrong. So, yeah, who do you blame about this? And that's where we come on to the third point, which is we end up then, because you can't sort out the situation between Israel and Hezbollah and Israel and Hamas and Israel and the Houthis and Israel and Iran and Israel and the Arabs, because we have no idea of how to do that, because we've been doing it for centuries and haven't got it right. And what you end up then is you start to blame everybody else. So you blame the United Kingdom, you blame America, you know, United Kingdom. Fancy putting them lines on a map and getting Europe to agree that these are the lines that divide up lumps of land. I've argued for years about the Kurds. You know, there should be a Kurdistan. There's more Kurds living there than probably anybody else, but they don't have a homeland because we didn't draw a line on a map because they were nomadic tribes. There was nowhere, you know, they would have had. The Middle East would have been Kurdistan. So what we end up with is a program that talks about, you know, the rows that are going on. And I still maintain, you know, because I'm interested in it, who out there can talk about how do we stop the conflict? You know, we listen to, and quite right, you know, how do you stop a warring tribe that says, we don't really care what the rest of the world says, we're going to carry on killing the Jews? How do you stop them from saying and doing that, but with at the same time, and all this, Hill says, you know, you can't have a two-state solution, and yet the rest of the world is saying it's got to be a two-state, but it's two secure states. And you go, what state are you going to give to Hezbollah? Because they're stateless. You know, they're not a country. They're not an entity in, other than they're some sort of tribal people who hate the Jews, who are always going to fight the Jews. So I want to hear people putting down, you know, Biden may be doddery. Yeah, he may be, but he ain't stupid. And you don't get to be the President of the United States with all of their advisers by someone who's saying thicko things that make no sense. Everybody has it, and everybody's got their finger in the Middle East as well, because they've got to worry about the oil, they've got to worry about, you know, the next phase of whatever sport the Saudi Arabians are buying, whatever it is. Let's stop having the conversations where people come on and just want to have a row about what the history is, have a row about who's right and who's wrong, talk about blaming other people. What are the solutions? Who out there can genuinely say, I think if we try this, it may work? And the first thing, however it's done, and this is where, you know, the United Nations have no teeth. Well, they do sort of, so long as all the countries agree with it, and you've got to get Russia on board with that. And you put in a peacekeeping force, that's a real peacekeeping force, and you you separate the people out, and you stop the Israelis building their communes in the West Bank, and you stop the Israelis from running Gaza as if it's just some little minor state and you've got to look after, and you stop Egypt from supplying, not supplying, but offering the tunnels and the in into, you know, getting arms and whatever into Gaza. We've all got to come together and do that, and I haven't heard anybody saying the problem we have is there's no such organisation in existence today other than, you can call it the United Nations, but it's not really, is it? It's the disunited United Nations.
Right.
Anyway, that's my point. Stop the rowing.
Yeah.
And use pairing there. As much as you're going hammer and tongs it and it sounds interesting, it's not progressing the argument into how do we stop the conflict? How do we stop the killing? How do we stop these kids? 50 kids yesterday, or 2 days, 50 kids were killed. They've got no, you know, they might grow up to be thugs, but you don't, you know, you can't tell me that a 3-year-old is going to pick up a rifle and fire it. Not happening.
Alf, thanks very much for your call in, as always. Good to hear from
all
you.
All the best, panel.
Thanks very much. And
thank you.
Thank you. Right then, to the social medias we go. Just hang on, just a second, please. Right, so let's go. So, from the top. Biden can't do anything at the moment, this one, and Netanyahu realizes this as it's election time. On the brink, this is referring to obviously the situation and the abyss and all that. It's been so for 80 years. He's nothing more than a tyrant, this is Netanyahu, and will prolong this long war as he's created many orphans that now have nothing to lose. Etta weren't committing, because I made the point about the fact that you create martyrs, and then therefore if you attack these sort of things, you have a recruitment campaign. So Etta weren't committing ethnic cleansing, though. Israel is more on par with the Serbs and, sadly, if not ironically, the Nazis. And then coming back to the opening of today's show, they've gone, yes, but no, but yes, but no, but yes. Thank you. This is a different one. So, Andreas' perspective is that Israel is the innocent victim. Isn't the state of Palestine, another one, recognized by 143 UN nations, which includes the West Bank, 145 nations, excuse me. Media Watchdog calls out biased reporting in UK on Israel's war on Gaza. A report by a Media Watchdog has revealed the UK's media bias in covering the Hamas attack on October the 7th and Israel's response. Much of the news coverage, this is the quote, much of the news coverage of October 7th refers to Hamas's attacks on southern Israel as ground zero, with guests or commentators who try and explain the 75-year-old occupation of Palestine being accused by some presenters and columnists of justifying the attacks. That's the report from the Center for Media Monitoring. Generally, it is pro-Israel, but not exclusively. Why? Another one. Why does the West need to comment, control, and criticize how countries run themselves? Don't we have enough problems domestically to attend to? As always, the one thing that people learn from history is that no one ever learns anything from history. Meanwhile, this one in Morning Dirk. Good morning, Giles. Bibi is a master of mayhem and genocide. Does anybody remember Shatila and Shabra? Those are the refugee camps, of course, who Sharon, of course, allowed the troops, the militias to go in there. He was in charge of that. I thought it was Sharon, but anyway. Some on your panel need to look up Dia Yassin and Folk, the King David Hotel, Ergan, Haganah, the Stern Gang. I have to recommend the book The General's Son by Milo Peled. He's from a very prominent Zionist family, and his book will open your eyes. Bolfer's successor, George Curzon, said that the declaration of his predecessor would create no end of problems. How right he was. Another one comes in. Always live, always lively. Trey's description certainly wouldn't disagree with that. Thank you. Morning, Ian. Max, here we go. Felix off the handle again. He may be right mostly, but he needs to go out some more. Funny old world. Thank you, Max. And I'm afraid the actions of Israel bombing Arabs in Palestine and Lebanon, Syria, Iraq doesn't bring peace to Israel. The Israeli plan is purely driven by economics and the greater Israel. Expansion of Israeli territory. Netanyahu's map in the UN doesn't acknowledge Gaza or the West Bank at all. The greater to Israel includes part of Sinai, Syria, parts of Iraq, and all of Lebanon. This is Zoe. Morning to you, Zoe. Ahmadinejad. Thank you very much. Ahmadinejad. I have to say Dinajak.
It wasn't Rasmanjani, it was Ahmadinejad who said...
Ahmadinejad didn't say wipe Israel off the map, right? Mm. He said Israel will follow South Africa in the pages of history. Also, Iran has the highest number of Jews in the Middle East and also member of parliament. Right. Panel, deep breath.
Yeah, can I just say one thing?
You can say
maybe
more than
people,
one thing. But,
maybe
yeah.
people don't know. The president, the new president of Iran, Pezeshkian, and Alfie was born in Kurdistan, so there you go.
Right.
He's a Kurd.
Right.
In the United Nations, he was over there in New York with everyone else, and he was actually having discussions with the United States and a couple of representatives from the European Union. And this was, if you remember also, this was shortly after his inauguration got the problem with the leader of Hamas being murdered in Tehran. And Iran did not react. The leader of Iran wanted to do something. But Pezeshkian, with several others, they went to the United States, they started talking through back channels, etc., and were promised by the United States that, you know, a ceasefire will happen. And he had to come out on public in Iranian news, etc., to say, I'm sorry, but we were lied to. And this is just last week, basically. So this guy, he's a cardiac surgeon. He's very well educated. In general, and I'm sorry to go on about Iran, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what's actually going on in Iran. The leaders tend to be very educated, very educated people. These are Shia clerics. A lot of them are Shia clerics, and Shia clerics are very different to Sunni clerics. Sunni clerics are all about religion. Shia clerics are more about religion and commerce and the world. They're very well read. So there's a big difference there between Sunni and Shia. But this Pezeshkian, you know, these guys, he's one of the reasons why he was elected is that he wants to try and make things better. He has stopped any arrests whatsoever on women wearing indecent clothing, as it were. You know, so if you're a lady and walking around any part of Iran without your veil, for example, you are not going to get arrested. That's not happening. And it hasn't been happening now for quite a long time. But now it's become a law. So anyway, but I agree with the other point about Alf. I think what we should do is start talking about, you know, how can we find a solution amongst all of this? Mm. How do you talk to the people like Netanyahu, who was on the rise? He's more popular now than ever before. How do you sit down and discuss these things?
Just going to take a quick ad break and then we come back with Andrea's response to that one.
Talk Radio Europe.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Joined in the studio by Richard Carr and Andres Gallardo. We've got 3 minutes before we go to the news. Doesn't time fly quickly when you're talking? No, we're straight to you, Andres, because the caller has, as if by magic, the caller has returned. Morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's Gil from Calpe.
Morning, Gil.
Alpha's right. He said I'm going to call.
Well, there you go. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, fine. Okay, I made a few points. Some of the remarks were so anti-Semitic and so wrong. Let's start with one of them. Sabra and Shatila, that was a massacre done by the Christians who massacred the Palestinians, not by Israel. And the Christians admitted it right away. They never denied it. Okay? But of course... There's propaganda, you know, and people blame Jews for everything, for the Titanic or for whatever. Okay, that's to put that thing right. Second thing, Ahmadinejad, he did say he wants to destroy Israel, okay? That was discussed before, okay?
Farsi. Can you read Farsi? Because in Farsi, that is not what he said.
The
translation to English. The translation. No, he didn't.
I
think that someone put a WhatsApp or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
What he said was that Israel will suffer the same fate as apartheid South Africa.
He said that, but he also said he wanted to wipe Israel off the map.
Never said that.
I don't speak Farsi, but but he said
right,
that.
So if you speak Farsi and you can read the Iranian newspapers, for example, you would find out that he didn't actually say that.
We've got 2 minutes
anyway,
left.
Carry on.
We've got 2 minutes left, Gil. So off you go.
Next thing.
Yeah.
What Felix said was more or less right, but in fact it wasn't one-fifth of Palestine that was left as Jews is one third. The conference he mentioned the conference of Saint Paris. It wasn't Paris, it was San Remo and things like that. But more or less what he said was right. Now, somebody said many countries recognize Palestine. It's nonsense. I can recognize that the moon is made out of blue cheese. It's not. It's a fact. Palestine doesn't exist. There's no such country. At least there's no such country now, okay? Now, it never existed in the past either, okay? But
so
Palestine,
to Tel Aviv.
It doesn't matter how many countries say it does exist. It doesn't, okay? Yeah, that's reality, okay? Now, the West Bank is in the hands of Israel. It conquered it or liberated it, whichever way you want, in 1967, and Israel had it since. Now, they mentioned the fact that Netanyahu is an extremist, Ben-Gvir is an extremist. I don't know why he is considered extremist. Yes, he's very religious, that's true. Okay, he's entitled to have, you know, his religious opinions, whatever he wants. But he doesn't want a Palestinian state in the West Bank. But nobody today in Israel wants a Palestinian state in the West Bank. Nobody. I mean, in the past, there was the peace camp, there was the peace now, there were some people. I mean, even Barak tried it in the Camp David talks. See, in the past, some people did want it. But nowadays, I don't know what you read in the newspaper, nobody in Israel wants especially after October the 7th, nobody in Israel, including the Arabs, by the way, wants a Palestinian state in the West Bank. It's not likely to happen. And with time, the Jews, there will be the majority. And it's already impossible.
Gil, unfortunately, the bongos are sounding, which means we're coming to the end of the first half of Viewpoints. So we're going to have to leave you there, I'm afraid, my friend.
Okay.
Thanks very much for your call in. Right, going to the national and international news and then back with more Viewpoints.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint. Always live, always lively. Joining the studio to Andres Gallardo and Richard Cowell. With you, if you want to get involved with this morning's Viewpoint, put your viewpoint across.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Quick update, IDF beginning a limited localised operation in Lebanon. Meanwhile, explosions and air raid sirens being held in Tel Aviv. Andreas, should we talk about Strictly Come Dancing and Philip Schofield, or do you want to talk? How are you going to do?
Strictly, please.
Strictly, okay, well.
There's a number of points. I mean, you've had Alf, you had the last caller as well making his points. The first one is that Richard, I cannot believe that I'm listening to someone trying to whitewash a regime like the Iranian regime, which is a theocratic dictator trying to control the whole of the Middle East by any means, and that is by warmongering around the region against Israel. That is a fact. That's an objective fact. The other point is when Alf mentioned the United Nations. I've seen the effect of, and I've seen it with my own eyes in this particular case, the effect of the United Nations peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon. I was there in 2019 before COVID. That was a joke. And I have to say, unfortunately, the bulk of the forces there, Spanish forces, representing the United Nations, that is a joke, because the United Nations never stopped Hezbollah from setting up a war front in the whole of the northern border of Israel. So the United Nations have been absolutely useless in that particular case. There are other cases I can mention, but we are focusing on this one. What it cannot be acceptable for Israel is to be like they have been for many years, under the constant threat of terrorists from the northern border and the southern border. And that had to come to an end when they have seen that Iran have launched the subsidiaries onto more and more attacks. They had to stamp the feet and say, enough's enough, and we're going to go for you. Unfortunately, as I said before, the coward terrorists, they go and hide in amongst the civilian population, which is a calculated effort to get the international media on their side and say, look what the Israelis are doing. But they're only doing it because they're chasing you. I mean, this guy, the Hezbollah leader, was killed the other day. What was he saying? In a residential part of Beirut, as a form of protection. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, this is the most coward strategy that you can have. I think that, as I said before, Israel is fighting the war for the West. The axis of Tehran, Moscow, and Beijing is a threat. We have to support what is right. We don't want. I mean, you started saying, Richard, we don't want any of these. I mean, I don't want any of these. I don't want to see war anywhere in the world. I don't want to see people dying. But we have to recognize that a state like Israel has got the right to defend itself and to defend her people, and also to be seen as a flagship of progress as they have been for many, many years. And if not, look at the country, which originally was a piece of desert, and now look at it and how they developed a country in a positive and progressive way.
Can you not argue, Andres, and forgive me, but can you not argue that there's a right to defend yourself? And then there is overkill, if you'll pardon the expression, which is what's going on in Gaza, and I keep saying this whole thing about going rogue, because to a neutral observer, if it wasn't Israel, if we were talking about country X and country Y, and I know you're going to say we can't do it because it's Israel, but to go after a group in another country and to then take out or launch offences against Houthi rebels in Yemen, another country, and then to say to the citizens to incite rebellion in another country is, I blandly said and stupidly said.
But that's where the threat comes from, Giles. I mean, the Houthis are controlling that strait and they are disrupting the whole of the world commerce. And nobody's doing anything about it. So it's left to the Israelis to defend themselves, because let's not forget that the Houthis have been rocket launching Israel for months. You can't just sit and watch and say we shouldn't do anything because we are. That's where the threat is, and that's where they go to the core of the threat to defend themselves.
I suppose now you're going to say that the Houthis represent an existential threat to the existence of Israel. Isn't that the next thing that you have to say?
No, they are a threat to the world commerce. They're a threat to the world commerce, and they are encouraged by Iran to do so. Yes. They paralyze the strait.
Yeah.
The boats have to take diversion.
That's a bit exaggerated.
It's not exaggerated, that's a fact.
Is it enough to say, okay, you're threatening world commerce, therefore we're going to launch missiles against you?
No, what right. I'm saying is that they're throwing rockets to Israel. Yeah. They have to be intercepted halfway, because if they are not intercepted, they're going to hit Tel Aviv. That is defending themselves. And if you got to the root of the problem to avoid that situation, I think that's legitimate defense. That is my view.
So you believe in, you have to escalate to de-escalate. This is what Netanyahu was saying.
We have to find solutions, and I agree with that. And yes, a lot of countries would have to come together.
Do you condemn what Netanyahu is trying to do? And the comments that people like Ben-Gavir have been saying about Palestinians that, you know, if they come and live here, they will have no rights whatsoever. No, do you defend that? Do you think that's really
I'm not defending that. The only thing I will say is the government in Israel is an elected government, and Netanyahu,
half an hour ago you were saying how bad Hamas was. They're elected in Gaza, and they have perfectly
elected 20 years ago. They've never left power, and they have terrorized their own people.
The argument you put forward that look at Israel. We've turned the desert into a garden. Well, there's nothing wrong with it. But before, the people there living there were quite happy. Well, why does that make you right and them wrong? It's a nonsensical, illogical argument. It has no basis, no sound basis whatsoever.
What are sound basis?
You say it's progression. Then the other thing about it is, if you look at what's been going on in the Middle East, remember the Iraq-Iran war?
Yes, of course.
Who started that? Who started the Iran-Iraq war? It wasn't Iran.
I think it was six of one and half a dozen of the other.
No, it was not. It was the United States, certainly, egged on Saddam Hussein to start on the war there. That was what?
If we take that route, we can say the United States put the Ayatollahs in power because they fell out with the Shah. So, I mean, that's why at the beginning I said, let's not go too far back in history.
I'm just
because
say,
we're going to muddle ourselves.
Why some countries,
and we have to look at the facts today, what we've got
As you approve of Israel being belligerent and killing thousands of people, you think that's a good thing because they're defending...
I haven't said that. I said Israel are after the terrorists. They are threatening the country, and the terrorists cowardly hide amongst the civilian population and their casualties there. But let's not be hypocrites here. The Allies destroyed Dresden and Hamburg on the way to Berlin, and there were more casualties then.
Bomber Harris, who was the guy behind all this blitzing, all right, and Bomber Harris got severely, severely punished for doing that. They thought it was a rapid way to get Germany into submission.
Are you going to start talking about the strategic bombing campaign of 1943
to
1945 and Churchill's role in the above?
That's why I don't want to go too bad.
Israeli apologists, all right, have said this ratio of four innocent people to one combatant. Said, well, in the Second World War, it was like that, so obviously it's quite legitimate. That's the excuse they use. All I'm saying is that a country, for example, look at Ukraine, all right? Ukraine is totally and utterly defenseless, really. If you can't defend yourself, you're going to have a problem. And I agree, Israel has the right to defend themselves, like every other country. Now, that means that other countries, if you look at someone like Iran, well, why can't they develop nuclear technology like Israel or Pakistan or India or any other, Russia? Why is it so bad for them to develop their technology? Who are we, or who are those countries like United States that say, no, you can't? Because like with Ukraine, they were told, well, we're going to help you, we'll defend you, etc. And now look at the mess that they got into. They could have developed nuclear technology, nuclear bombs, etc. And then no one would have gone and invaded them. So the right to defend yourself covers a broad spectrum of how to defend yourself. So let's stop that.
Let's open the gate and let's all have nuclear weapons.
No, what solution is there to this problem that we're facing at the moment? Bearing in mind that we know a little bit about the history, bearing in mind that we both find murder, pillage and everything else horrible, where do we go from here? What, on your side, how do we solve this?
Well, are you asking me to solve the Middle East problem?
An idea.
If you wouldn't mind, Andreas, and we've got 9 minutes before the next ad break. So yeah.
No, where do we go from here?
Where does this show states like the American, because they are seen to be completely impotent in this thing, in this situation at the moment.
They're not impotent. Well, you think that they're not impotent. They are right behind Israel on this, because there's too much to play for here in the Middle East and affecting the whole world. Because as I said, there is that is a fact, Richard. There is an act. with Moscow, Beijing, and Tehran. Is it not?
It's a huge shift.
You agree?
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
The Iran are supplying all the drones to Moscow to help the war, and they're supplying with oil to China. That's not a fact.
Of course, they're supplying oil to China.
The fact is we have a block,
and to Korea
we have a block on that side. That funnily enough, in that block there hasn't been a change of power, because they don't alternate power. They're permanently the dictators that are permanently there. And then we have the European Union. Forget the European Union, because this is a theme park.
There is a shift. I agree. There is a shift towards the east, both with the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement, all right, and also with the BRICS, the enlarged BRICS. Yeah. And what is interesting is that the people who are now becoming members of BRICS are those guys who actually own the commodities. Okay, and they want to start trading these commodities in their own currencies to try and get away from this threat of being subservient to the US dollar. Now, it had to come sooner or later, because the US has been using the dollar, weaponizing the dollar, for years now. And people say, well, hold it, this can't happen. SWIFT, for example, they when they put sanctions on, they say, a country can't use SWIFT, and that sort of severely hampers trade and commerce. That does affect global commerce and global trade. So it is not surprising that countries following the lead primarily of China, with their new Silk Roads that they're developing, are looking towards the east. Of course they are. And this is the problem. And the United States is going to have... And Europe is an insignificant player. They're like a little pet dog, a little poodle. United States...
I'm glad to say.
Yeah. Right. I think United States will find themselves in a bit of a pickle when they suddenly realize that, it's not a unipolar world anymore. There is a huge amount of strength now coming from the east. And it will happen.
It will happen.
There's too much bullying by the United States. People are fed up and say, okay, we'll look east. And these guys are the countries that have the commodities that people are so dearly looking
for. But while we have that power developing in the east, we still have the Middle East, which is in the middle.
Well, Western Asia. Western Asia.
It is in the middle, and it's an important part of the world,
right?
For many reasons, and one, we're still dependent on
Saudi Arabia applied
now,
for
look,
BRICS.
Look at
UAE
the difference.
UAE has applied for BRICS.
But look at the difference of the two powers in the Middle East are Saudi and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we agree on that, because I'm trying to find a common point.
Right
now, the Saudi are. I'm not defending Saudi by any means, don't get me wrong. It's still, a dictator's brutal state. But they have realized that they have to diversify their economy from just oil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And they're doing that, and they have looked out thinking, if we're going to diversify our economy, where we want to position ourselves here? And they've realized that the free commerce from the West is more beneficial to them than the controlled commerce from China in the East. So for that, they want to be the dominant force in the Middle East.
I think I would disagree a little bit on that.
And if you got Iran who wants to be the strong force in the Middle East, the dominant force, and they're looking the other way, so you have a conflicting situation.
Can I just say something?
The Abraham Pact.
Cool,
yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was never got to be signed because of October 7th.
UAE signed it. Bahrain signed it. Morocco signed it.
Yeah.
We had in Dubai. I remember when the Abraham. Actually, funny enough, we had a business. One of the business we had was as a literary agent. All right, we were in editorials, and when the Abrahamic Accord was signed, literally within 24 hours, we started receiving emails and from Israel saying, can we have joint ventures, et cetera, which is very interesting because the media is primarily run by majority Jewish-owned entities. And these were New Yorkers living in Jerusalem, and they are a huge entity as the editorial world is. And I was really excited. They represented Europe for Hariri, Sapiens and all that. And they called us because our company was called Literary Sapiens. So that's where it came from. And so I was really excited, but I thought, well, this is going to be really sort of good. It's going to go take us to the next level. And we were buying and selling language rights in from English books, like Queen's Gambit and stuff like that, into Middle Eastern languages and vice versa, etc. So then I said, well, okay, well, before we do this, let's go and call, you know, the guys that we actually do business with. And they could be from Morocco to Lebanon to Jordan to Iraq, etc., and Iran as well. So we asked them. The only country that said, yes, go ahead with dealing with this group in Israel were the Iranians, surprisingly enough. But that's just an anecdote.
Right. Okay. Well, I was trying to get to the point.
Yeah.
When I mentioned the Abraham Pact, is that Iran saw that going ahead was going to hindrance their position in the Middle East, and that's why the subsidiaries of Iran were launched into attack. Mm-hmm. With a view of getting the support from the Arab world, which they failed so far.
Saudi Arabia has... Saudi Arabia and Iran have always had differences. They always have. You know, from times of Shah and before, they always had differences, apart from the religious one as well. But they've always been talking to each other. And the central banks, quite recently, Iranian central bank and the Saudi central bank, were talking to each other, had meetings. So there is discussion, obviously. All these people have discussed.
But one thing about Iran that I know from my own experience is the Iranians are very good at talking. They're very good at sitting at a table. And because, as you said before, and I can, you know, I will agree with you, and I know that is a fact. They're very well-read people. Mm. They're very cultured people. Mm. And they're very well-behaved people. They're very polite.
Yes.
And I don't deny that. Mm. So when you sit around the table with Iranians, you would sort of... if you're a neutral, you would be siding with them because they baffled you with their education and their knowledge and everything else. But the reality that we're living now is that the regime, the theocratic regime, is brutal, regardless of what you say to me. You're not going to convince me otherwise. And the other thing is...
I'm going to invite you to Iran. You can come with us to Iran and have a look. There you go.
Yeah, well, I even do my
go for the food alone.
So, yeah. Can I just want one little anecdote on that one again?
Right.
You know, back in the discussions of oil and royalties between Iran and the UK, as going back, you know, sort of early 1900s, the two tables were, you know, the two sides were talking to each other, and you had an arbiter. And I think it was a Times newspaper, so went to the arbiter, said, how are things going? He said, oh, awful. It's terrible. I said, well, why is this? He says, well, the English never mean what they say, and the Iranians never say what they mean. So I agree with you. And having done business in Iran, I know it's incredibly frustrating because they're so polite. But at the end of the day, they're actually quite good businessmen.
I understand why they're at the table. Yeah. But the reality on the ground is different. The reality on the ground is that they want a Middle East domination, and they'll go whatever it takes to do so, and that's why they have created these subsidiaries.
The three main subsidiaries, which are terrorist
groups, that they are doing what terrorists is terrorizing.
If the West wanted to destroy the government of Iran, it's very easy, and it always has been.
They did it with the Shah, but it's not so easy now.
Okay, we can go 1953, CIA, MI6 killed. All right, so how far back do you want to go? Listen, if the West wanted to topple the regime in Iran, all they have to do is drop the sanctions, and Iran will be westernized immediately.
They
will be westernized. They love everything Western.
The people in the street
of course,
do.
And the people will change the government.
Religious elite that run the country, they don't want
they
that. They don't want to go back to the happy Iran that was when the Shah was there.
The religious elite, all right, are not like the, shall we say, the Sunni type of religious elite. These guys are also very commercially tender. They have a lot of businesses. The clerics in Iran have businesses, you know. So the problem with dropping the sanctions in Iran means that all the small and medium-sized businesses that really hold up the Iran economy will start to collapse, because you start getting all these other multinationals coming in. Mm. You have unemployment, you have high inflation. That government will disappear very, very quickly, believe me. And the Iranians, they love, amazingly so, they love everything Western.
Going to take a cool small break for an advert break and then back with my viewpoint.
This is TRE. TRE.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And we were discussing the merits of Persian food and how there's no such thing as having a small Persian tapa or something like that. The hospitality is legendary. To the WhatsApp social media we go if you want to get yourself your viewpoint across.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Via Facebook, Talk Radio Official. Good morning to Elizabeth in Brighton. Hi, hello there. I think the troubles in Northern Ireland were resolved by allowing the women to sort it out. Maybe the problems in the East could have a similar solution. Also, and Elizabeth speaks the truth, I'm fed up with stars complaining about their working conditions. If they don't like the conditions, why don't they use their workers' right and walk out? Could it be the money? They want the money, but not the work. Stay safe. That's from Elizabeth in Brighton. To the lines we go. Once again, morning caller, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. My name's Neil, and I'm from Marbella.
Morning, Neil.
Just to go back to the situation in Israel, which we seem to have drifted away from. It's no doubt that Hamas are winning the media war, without a shadow of a doubt, because whatever they say, people believe. And I think Richard has said so this morning in so many words. They say that a month or so ago, 40,000 people had been killed. Now, we all know that that particular religion, they have to be buried within a very short period of time. But during that period, if anybody was collateral damage to blowing up an arms dump and four or five people were killed and three or four children had blood on them in the hospital, this was big news. And if the 40,000 was correct, what happened to the other 100 plus that day that were killed? So I think we have to take some of the media with a pinch of salt, because it's been biased in my opinion. The other point I like to make is I'm a Christian, I'm not a Jew. And I've been to Israel on a number of occasions because of my religion to look at the religious sites. And every time I've been there since the early 80s, I've met people who you would call Palestinians, who own businesses. The children are going to school with briefcases. They're very happy that they have hospitals and have a standard of living which they didn't have before. And they are probably 2 million people. This idea of a two-state can't possibly work, because you'll always have that small faction which will be looking to cause a problem. If you think about Northern Ireland, the amount of members of the IRA compared to the population of Ireland was very small. When Israel expelled all those people in 2005 from Gaza, saying you've got to leave your home, you've got to leave your business, get out, you're not allowed back in here anymore, that was the Jews they expelled to give Gaza to the people who called themselves Palestinians. What happened? All the aid that was poured in went into munitions, went into building tunnels, preparing for war against Israel. And as I forget the guy's name, spoke about the West Bank. The West Bank was part of Jordan. It was never part of Palestine. And in 67, when Israel conquered it because they were attacked, it was then eventually, in the late 90s, signed over to Israel. The only way to solve this problem is to get rid of the heads of these terrorist organizations and let the other people live in peace, which they want to do. It's not the whole of the Palestinian population of Israel that wants this war. They want to continue living as they did before it. And they were quite happy. And that's my experience of Israel over, I think, five or six visits since the early 80s. And it doesn't really correspond to what I'm hearing in the press, nor does it correspond to what I'm hearing from one of your panel this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for your call in. Nice to have you with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
952
Yes,
Andreas.
Can I go on that? I mean, I agree with you, gentlemen, but the Western media are heavily siding the Palestinian cause. And I've just seen this morning pictures of a demonstration in Madrid full of women and the gay community in favor of the Palestinian cause, when they don't realize that if they go to Gaza as a representative of the gay community, let's see what happens to you.
Let's see what happens. We're going to go live to the lines. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, we seem to have lost that one. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Charles. It's Charles from Mallorca. Good
morning, Charles.
I've just heard the gentleman who proclaims he's a Christian wants to visit the Christian site, so I presume he's fairly deeply into his religion.
Right.
Has he taken account to go to the Palestinian side of things and see the site that exists there? How most, if you visit Israel for a holiday, you don't see very many Palestinians. Not there. They represent, I think, about 20% of the population of Israel, yeah. True, or Israel as a country. The occupied West Bank is just that, it's occupied. To go anywhere has to have permission of Israeli military, of the Israeli IDF, which is unacceptable for so many years. Everything is, they're herded like cattle. They're not given any rights at all. And if you look at the testimony of ex-Israeli soldiers, you'll see some of the terrorists they employ to basically keep the Palestinians frightened. They'll raid known innocent houses, because they don't want to raid a house that's maybe under surveillance by the Secret Service, by Shin Bet. No, they want to raid somebody that has no connection with any form of resistance movement, and they'll take somebody into arrest, handcuff them, take them away, interrogate their family, and then release them a few hours later, just literally as a terrorist tactic. And that's from ex-Israeli soldiers who themselves see their actions, what they've done, and realise how reprehensible they are.
Andreas?
I said this before. The West Bank problem is a different problem to what we're seeing, and there is an element of truth in the fact that the settlements, there are different types of settlements. There are those who don't affect the daily life of the Palestinian people there, and there are those who are totally invasive, and I've seen them, with ex-military Israelis who are completely against that, breaking the silence. Were the guys that I met there, and they showed me
exactly
some of the settlements, in particularly in the town of Hebron. The settlers have broken that city, and there's a lot of Israelis. They are against that situation, because they realise the damage they've done to the Palestinians living there. And I would defend Israel on most things, but not on everything. And that's one of the things that I would criticise forever an end for what they're doing to towns like that. On the other hand, I saw something that is an anecdote, if you like, Richard, but it's something that really surprised me, is when the Israeli military were searching the school bags of children coming out of school. And I thought, that image to me really impacted me, because I thought there was like, you know, is that too much? But funnily enough, the guys from Breaking the Silence, who are very, very critical of that situation, they said, oh, well, we have to do that, because the terrorists used the children to carry the explosives. So that's a non-negotiable situation. So it is it's very difficult to deal with that situation. I do agree that the settlements, or some of the settlements,
Andreas, I would ask you a question, and they have been spearheaded by
a lot of Americans who
quick
have
question,
gone there.
Quick question, because I've got some more calls coming in, but just a quick question. Off you go.
Just to finish on that one. Oh, sorry.
A quick question.
Yeah.
What do you have examples of children carrying explosives?
No, I don't.
They say it,
All I saw was the search,
right.
And the people who were critical with the situation there were the first ones who defended the search.
Right.
So, I don't have any evidence of children carrying.
Going to another call there. Thanks so much for your call in. Morning call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Thank you for waiting. What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, it's Neil again in Marbella.
Yes, Neil.
The last time I was in Israel, and I did go to many places which were non-Jewish, unlike the caller suggested, I decided to drive to Galilee after going down to the Jordan. I filled up with petrol, turned up the road to Jericho. Half a mile into that journey, or a kilometre or so, there's a sign on the side of the road. It's a huge sign. It's got to be 5 or 6 metres tall by the same wide. And in many languages, it says, if you are not Palestinian, please turn round. Your life will be in danger if you go forward. Now, I've been to Jericho a number of times, but now you can't do it, because it's not safe. And it's not safe because the Israeli army are doing anything. It's not safe because there are a few people who would love to do you harm. So the gentleman, who is obviously very biased, is wrong. You can go to anywhere in Israel except the odd designated place, which is fully signposted. So let's just make sure that we don't castigate the Jewish population completely. Every population makes mistakes.
Thank
you. Every country in the world makes mistakes. So let's just try and have a bit of balance, please.
Can I make a comment on, I mean, I agree with that, and a lot of mistakes. I've had to do business in Israel, etc., and a lot of the Israelis are like normal, you and I, we want to get on with life and everything's fine. The other comment is just on children and weapons. It's quite a common thing in the Second World War, for example, children were used by resistance to carry pistols, etc. It's always has been the case.
Thanks very much for that. Going to some of the social media... Going to some social media, the WhatsApps doesn't have evidence but has facts. Curious. That's looking at... there are alternative. The say facts one more time, Andres, and somebody's put a picture of Samuel L. Jackson in, say something one more time. Anyway, problem is you can't, there are alternatives to Swift, though, but you can't change, the problem is you can't trade Chinese yuan easily. Yuan, anyway. The ruble, forget it. Removing governments is one thing, but be careful what you wish for. The successor could be much worse. Meanwhile, looking at the social... this came in on studio at TRE.radio. Because Europe decided where the lines would be drawn in the Middle East, people associate themselves with their tribal backgrounds. There are no Sunnis or Kurds or any other tribal name you want to give. So the guy in Iran isn't a Kurd. He is an Iranian who believes in Kurdism. Okay. Yes, okay. Right then, going to go to a short break. The last, oh, Andres, sorry, were you just going to come in with something?
Yeah, I just wanted to go on the gentleman that we mentioned about the West Bank. The West Bank is divided into zones, A, B, and C, I think they are. And they all have the differences in terms of who rules there and who doesn't and what the Israelis do and what the Palestinian authorities do and so on. The Bethlehem, for instance, is I think is zone C, or is the other way around, might be zone A, where the Israelis are not allowed to go in. They have to have a special dispensation to go in. And that's a complete Palestinian town, which incidentally originally was about 25% of Christian Arabs. Now there's only 2% left of Christians because the Arabs push them out. So I'm just trying to say that not all Palestinians are saints. There, of course, there are superb people there and really nice, peaceful people. But we cannot sort of sanctify the whole of the populations because you get good and bad everywhere. So now you can go to your adverts or your media. Thanks, John.
Thank you very much indeed.
Talk Radio Europe. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively, joined by Andy Escarado and Richard Cowell. Into the last 10 minutes of this morning's Viewpoint. Doesn't time fly when you're having animated discussion? The numbers again.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
The numbers to get involved with this morning's show, Andreas.
952-78-400.
4,000. It's the missing zero, like on the end of my bank balance every month.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, 8 minutes to go. Should we do any other business? Because I think we've
American election.
American election.
Have you seen Donald Trump? He's flogging watches and coins.
Is it his own?
You could buy the Trump watch. Gold with diamonds is $100,000. Only 147 are being made. Right. He's got number one.
But
if you know, it goes down to about
presumably the feature VP has got a
but he's also the Donald J. Trump coin that you can buy for $100.
Commemorative. And he's, on the 6th
and he
of
makes
January.
These adverts, and you can't believe it. This is, you know, the guy going for an ex-president and going for a presidency.
Yeah.
And he's sort of touting these things. That's incredible.
What was the NFTs? Is it the NFT? You know, those
fungible, yeah.
Fungible
things, yeah.
With him looking like he was Rocky Balboa or Arnie and the Predator. Quite interesting.
What is quite interesting about the
money laundering
American
exercise, according to my today, you go straight in, boom.
Okay. One thing is quite interesting about American politics is that the president has got a 4-year term.
Yes.
But at the end of the third year, you start entering into the campaign for the next election. And then many decisions are put off because the election is there and they can't do this and that because the election could be affected by it. So in reality, it's not a 4-year term, it's a 3-year term.
I don't think he really has that much power. I think there's a lot of lobbyists and people who run like the civil service, equivalent of the civil service in the States, etc., who really carry the policy.
My view on the American election is just it's a big show. We are all very much distracted by it. But the reality is the country is not run by the president.
Jimmy Carter.
There are a lot of players there who are actually running
the lobbyists.
The lobbyists. But you've got Congress, you've got Senate, you've got the judiciary, it's great entertainment to see the electoral campaign. But the reality is the influence that will then have in the day-to-day running of America.
I remember Obama, his platform was, yes, we can. Mm. He couldn't do bloody anything, really, at the end of the day.
And Jimmy Carter turns 100 today, so happy birthday to former U.S. President Jimmy Carter.
Oh, can I also just say one thing?
He was a peanut king, wasn't he?
He was indeed.
In a couple of days' time, I believe it's a Jewish New Year.
It is.
Right.
So, you know, Happy New Year in advance.
Get live to the lines. Live to the lines we go. Thank you for holding, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Felix.
Felix.
Hi. I just want to take up perhaps one point of Commander. He's talked about, basically he said, history is a waste of time, that we're only going to end up in rows and nothing will be achieved. So therefore, talk about what can be done, that kind of pragmatism.
Yeah.
However, if you remove history from our understanding of ourselves as a human species and our nations, then we become like sheep wandering through the field. But human beings are not like that. Human beings are responsible for the sheep and for mankind and for the animal world. And we cannot turn aside from history. And I note that the points I raised earlier on were not taken up at all. I raised the point about how Israel was formed in its beginning stages from Balfour Declaration, 1917, and then Paris meetings in Paris, 1921, took it over.
Mm.
And then from there it was decided that Britain would be given the mandate, took it up in 1923. But before Britain took it up, it cut up Palestine, giving four-fifths of Palestine to the Arabs and one-fifth to the Jews.
Uh-huh.
But as we know, that wasn't the end of the story. The Arabs then, Haj Amin al-Husseini started operating, the Muslim Brotherhood started operating. I'm not going into that anymore. But this program seems to be a little unfair in one way, because a person like me comes on and makes a few points over a few minutes, and then the opponents can have, you know, the whole program to slander, really.
Right.
You said something to me earlier on that...
Gosh, isn't it?
That people are not being realistic about the Palestinian movement. And this thing that Andreas brought up there just hit home to me, where the gays... or the queers for Palestine, very active in all these marches. Mm. It's really unreal. It's really unreal because the queers were taken up to top of buildings and pushed off. We saw that when Hamas came into power. It's an unreal situation. It's run on emotion, and to get reason involved in this is just impossible. So I think I'll take my leave of this program for a while and see what happens.
Thank you. Thank you for your call in there.
Comment on it.
You can make a comment on that.
I think, and I let Felix talk uninterrupted, but I think he makes a lot of sense to a certain extent. And it's a pity that, you know, you should be active participant in all of this. What Andrea and I said, right, I think right in the beginning was, well, you know, history is history, and history is very important, but it sort of blurs the lines a little bit about where do we go on from here. And the important thing is to look, where do we go? Because we spent the whole day talking about Balfour and the UN 1947 and all that. It doesn't help necessarily in this context about going ahead, looking ahead, what can be done.
Yeah, you can't go, we said at the beginning, you can't go back in history because you'll end up 3,000 years, you know, and
but knowing that it's enough time.
If you could go back in history, where would you go, Andres? What would you, if you had time machine? We're going to leave this on a light note, you see, panel.
Yeah, I would go to the Ottomans. And the deal with the Bedouins. We we forget the Bedouins in the
whole situation. Let's not bring in the Bedouins, for goodness sake.
Let's go to the Bedouins. The Bedouins are very important. I've got a very good Bedouin friend, actually, who lives in the desert there. But I would go to the Ottomans, because the Ottomans, they really didn't want to be there. And they sold off a lot of the land to the people who came from Eastern Europe after the pogroms there. And they were, and the ones who could escape the pogroms were people who had the ability to go there. Mm. Obviously, people with a bit of money, and they were happy to sell the land. And that's where a lot of Jewish people went there and bought land, because they're escaping from that. So that, to me, would be the point in time where I would go. I wouldn't go any further back, because
Richard, where would you come? I'm going to write that. Richard, where would you go? Just to leave it on a light note, because we've had some pretty hefty talk. Well, if you had a time machine,
I'd go probably to the days of the British Raj in India and see what Rio was like.
Fair enough.
Because it's a fascinating time in history, and it's terrible on one side and great on the other. And, you know, a lot of fortunes were made. Yale University came from the British Raj and all that. The founder of Yale,
yes,
made his money in India. And he was, I think, Irishman working for in the British Army. I think it's a fascinating time where, you know, exploration and entrepreneurship, etc., was its foremost.
Oh, there you go. And personally, I would probably be Jimi Hendrix at Monterey 67, but there you go. Right, out of time. It has once again been a pleasure. My huge thanks to all of you for your calls, to my panel who are outstanding today. My thanks to Richard Carroll.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And Andres Gallardo.
Thank you very much.
This will be repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson is up next. Thanks so much for your calls in.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.